Hi, it's Karen Webster for Payments.com, and I'm here today with Nuno Sebastio, the CEO of SpeedSci. Nuno, thanks for joining me today.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
It has been a while, and it's great to have you back. So SpeedSci has some exciting news that we're going to talk about today, and that particular news is the recent round that you raised, $17.5 million. To really scale and define what is already a powerful fraud detection platform. So two questions that come to mind, first of all. I guess first is, what did investors find particularly attractive about your platform, given that the space is now crowded with billions of players that are all clamoring for visibility in the space? And then what do you plan to do with the money?
Yeah, so those are probably the first one, the question that, I mean, we've been answering ourselves. So it's what it is that we have as a business that really sets us aside. And I think what we've seen that then investors valued by literally writing us a check was two things. One is, can your technology really solve the problem? And I would say that a lot of the solutions out there, they are working along one angle, that is the angle of, I'll get some sort of data at device level, at social level, at whatnot, and then I'll try to use this data to understand if it's fraud or not. We come at it from a completely different approach. We come at it from a purely technological approach that's based on particular client's data, not using consortium data as an example, understanding what are the behaviors that are indicative of fraud for him, and we know that, yes, there's a lot of similarities among players, among merchants, for instance, or processors, but each one has a specific set of data. So we focus more on the technological engine than having a ton of data to then share with everyone. And we've demonstrated a number of times the kind of results that we can get. That materializes to clients, that is materializing to some very, very long contracts. I mean, our average contract is a 5-year contract. And since we operate on a yearly revenue model, that is very, very attractive for investors in the sense that we can forecast a 5-year horizon on how much money we're going to be making. And, you know, I mean, investors, they are betting on building the future, not so much as well on the momentum that you have, but more like, is this a business that can sustain long-term growth and revenue? And we've demonstrated that by, as an example, last year, we had a 300% year-on-year growth. And this year, we're going to sustain that growth. And that's really interesting. We're at the middle of the year, and we're more than on track to achieve that. That's why investors wrote a check.
So before we get to the, and what are you going to do with the money part of my question, I want to go back to something you said. So you said that they found value in SpeedSci because our technology can solve the problem. What is the problem? There are so many of them in the cybersecurity, keeping data safe, keeping networks and systems safe. What problems specifically do you solve?
Yeah. So here's where we started solving, and here's where our clients took us. So we started solving just the transactional risk fraud. So when you swipe a card, what's the risk of that particular swipe being fraud or not? But then we realized that actually the internal data that we are using of a client was to assess us, to help us assess that particular transaction, was what have we seen before the transaction from that client? What have we seen from different types of clients? And that actually helped us realize that what we do is what's called risk management in a wider scenario. So we have use cases where we are used for online account opening, not to understand the credentials are fraudulent or not, but to understand not only should we allow that person to have to come into the system, and if so, what kind of risk are we willing as an organization to take with that person? That's one use case. Then we have the transactional credit card based type of transactions. But then we also work with acquirers where the acquirers are using our tool to offer their merchants a so-called chargeback management system, so that allows their merchants to understand they should ship or not a particular good, particular item, but also for them to do something that's called continuous merchant underwriting, to continuously track the behavior of the merchant itself to understand if the merchant is fraudulent or not. And here comes back to the theme that I was saying, what we sell is more the engine that then is deployed to these different use cases than just to say, oh, we are an e-commerce fraud solution, or we are an issuer fraud solution, or we are an acquirer fraud solution.
So as I understand what you said and what you said earlier, what is really very unique is you're not looking at millions of data points that aggregate across a spectrum of clients. You're evaluating this for a particular customer. And the patterns, the patterns of behavior that happen in that particular customer's environment.
Yeah, so that's correct. That's why our target clients are clients that have the volume to do this. Because what we've seen, it doesn't mean that we don't use external data sources to enrich what we do. What we've demonstrated over and over is that by applying our technology to the data that is internal to a client and that we will not share with third parties, we are able to do a better job. I mean, given that the client has sufficient information, we're able to do a better job than just using the so-called consortium data that is what every client is willing to give to everyone, but also in essence to their competitors. So we've seen that in some of the organizations we work with, there's such a richness of information inside that just by using that, and of course, I mean, it's also bringing in some external data sources, that device fingerprinting, email validation, store notes, some cybersecurity elements, but taking as a premise the internal data and then enriching with external one, we're able to do a much better job. We essentially think about it like that. We're able to know the customer and to manage to profile the customer to understand if what's happening is nominal or if it's some sort of deviation that might be indicative of fraud. We consistently were able to do a better job and not have what is the plague of this industry, that is not have a very low false positive rate, which is the real cost when you apply technology like this.
That's a very good point. But do you look at the specific clients, I'm just, for lack of a better term, engines or databases, you know, for the specific client instances, do you look at them for patterns that might be helpful to inform the actions for other clients? Do you use client data to inform other client data?
So it depends on the SLAs we have. So our largest clients do not allow us to do that. And we're deployed on their data centers. We don't even have access to the production machines. And that's just the way you like it. Some clients, typically smaller ones, they do allow us to share. But what we do not share is the data itself. What we share is the measurement that we've done on such data. So what we call profiles, which in itself contains no PII, no personal information, no bank-specific information, but gives us measurements, gives us patterns. And that we found as value. And by using that approach, you're able to take care of the privacy concerns of that client while, let's say, benefiting the wider community. But again, not consortium data. What we measure is the profiles, and what we take out is the profiles.
Gotcha. What are some of the outcomes of that clients have achieved in working with you and deploying your technology to their situation? And you talk about this as being a much broader solution than just fraud detection, really more risk management as well. Give us a sense of some of the ROI that clients have shared with you as a result of working with you.
Yeah, let me put it like that, and without, let's say, disclosing any information about a particular client, but today, opening an online account, deposit account, or trying to get an insurance online, you can do those, but the rejection rates, just because there's not enough information, is really, really high. I mean, it typically range from 40% of people that are rejected to 60% of people that are rejected just because the screening process is not really good and they ask for a ton of information. So imagine if you are able to go from there, so from rejecting 40% to 60% of all the people that try to either get an online insurance or try to get an online account, if you're able to move that from there to a place where you can accept 80%, 90% of the people that try to get those same online services. And what you do is once they're inside, you manage their risk. You manage the kind of things that they can or cannot do. What kind of products? Do you give them an unsecured credit card or do you give them a secured credit card? Do you allow them to fund or don't you allow them to fund? Do you give them a policy, an insurance policy that is bigger or an insurance policy that covers less items, depending on wherever they live? So that's the kind of things that then you can have a measurable ROI on these type of use cases. On the type of use case where we're talking about pure transactional fraud is about, it's all about false positives. The game is how much more fraud can you detect without impacting the good people, the good behaviors. Not only a commercial impact to the issuer or the networks you're working with, but also has a reputational impact because someone that was doing a transaction was rejected. And another example then on the, let's say, on the acquiring side, we were able, with our technology, to detect in a particular client up to 10 days before that a particular merchant was going to go back. As you know, I mean, sometimes acquirers, they do underwrite to an extent the merchants. And if you're able to detect way earlier that the merchant is going to go bad, you start to withhold funds, you don't do net-based funding, and so on and so forth. Right? So there's measures you can take because one day it will happen that they'll just swipe a whole bunch of cards, they're gone, and people start calling their banks saying, it was me. And the bank gives them the money back and someone's going to have to pay for it. And the merchant's no longer there. So we've also seen those use cases. So in reality, I mean, there's a number of them that this can be applied. And I think that's when we were talking to investors, and we had exactly the same conversations about, oh, but there are all of these players on the e-commerce space trying to go after chargeback management, trying to go after that. And in reality, at some point, we run this out as a process, and we had investors realizing not only the numbers we had in the sales, but also the ROI that we're providing. And we heard things like, you guys are charging way too low. And they're like, yeah, we know, because of the value that we're creating for our clients. So, you know.
You should cherish those conversations, you know, those rarely happen.
Yeah, too. And this takes me a little bit to the investors, I mean, that we chose to work with us. We've spoken with a number of VCs and industry players, more generic, more focused in fintech. And we ended up selecting the good folks from Oak because they're experienced in the space. They really know the space. I mean, that's why they're well qualified to say you're charging way too low. And also, I mean, we're bringing to our board not only Patricia Kemp, I mean, she's on a number of fintech companies in this space, but also Jonathan Weiner, who, I mean, himself an entrepreneur, which I value quite a lot, and now a venture partner at Oak, which I value quite a lot because he's giving me and the company the kind of guidance that we need to scale the business and to execute on our vision. So I'm really, really happy with that.
And, you know, final question, $17.5 million, Series B, that's a big check. How are you planning to deploy the funds?
So, I mean, as we work with some of the largest organizations out there, one thing we cannot is screw up in terms of support, SLA, and we have some very stringent SLAs in some sense. So this funding is used for to really build first world top-notch support. So after things go into production, how do we support our clients? So that's one area where we're going to be investing. We literally just shook hands on our New York office. So we're going to open an office in New York. So that's one. And then, let's say at the delivery side, most and foremost is to really strengthen our sales and our, let's say, go-to-market team. We are a company with over 60 people now, but we have two salespersons. So really, it's been more inbound and people coming to us than us reaching out there. And I think we're now at a stage of the machine that we built, the company that we built, where we can start to really scale that side of the business. So the product is built, is tried, is tested, it demonstrated at the highest possible level of performance. We can now go into more clients faster. We will be covering other regions as well. We have a very large client, India, so we're thinking about that as well. So as you can see, all of a sudden, 7.5 million don't look that much anymore when you start investing in those areas.
It's amazing how it sounds like a big number, but can go very quickly. Well, you know, it was a real pleasure to get caught up with you again and to learn about the developments in Feedzai's technology platform. It's really quite an interesting story, and we wish you the best of luck going forward and look forward to staying in touch as the business scales, you bring on more clients, and can share more insights. Thank you very much.